Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project. You can join our team by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Be the media. As always, I'm very excited when I hear our respect song. It's totally consistent with the Coffee Party commitment to incite civility and reason. And it's with civility and reason I hope to incite a little conversation with you and with our guest today. Remember, the number to call in is 646-929-2495. But first, let's get started. Our guest today is Steve Sarich. He's the president of the Washington State Hemp Commission. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about why I wanted someone like him to be on this show today. On the one hand, July 1st, 2015, will be the first day to legally use marijuana recreationally, or as I say, without a prescription in Oregon. By the way, as a sidebar, we don't say recreational alcohol. I am not sure why we say recreational marijuana, but okay, end of comment. People use the ballot box to change the law. In a 69% voter turnout, legalization won 56.1% to 43.89%. In votes, that means 847,865, yes, to 663,346 no. On the other hand, national figures like Chris Christie are all but declaring war on citizen-sourced law that allows the use of marijuana. Governor Christie is not alone. And I guess I wanted to investigate what's the pro and con here, what's the stressor between folks like me who voted yes and people like Chris Christie, and what I found was much more complex than what I thought I would find. National and international concerns are quietly trying to deal with the international treaty violations that would be easily solved, that could be easily solved. As long as marijuana remains a Schedule I prohibited substance under federal law, although U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said the Justice Department will not pursue this in states that legalize, you know, we have a challenge if we do not enforce federal law in terms of various treaties that we're a part of. The public rhetoric about crime waves and declining moral values. These folks seem to appear to be steadfast in the face of the fact that there are positive outcomes for legalization found in Colorado and Washington. You on the East Coast call it Washington State. We in the Northwest call the nation's capital D.C. District. Income, reduced crime, even homicides and sexual assaults have been reduced. So what's really going on here? And the public implementation of these laws is obstructive and, quite frankly, misses the point of the referendum. Administrative rules are creating a massive bureaucracy of hoops to jump through and penalties for noncompliance that would impress Putin. I think I'm most disturbed by the convoluted way a very simple request by the public is being interpreted. So while we're in Oregon and we watch the clock ticking down to the big day, it appears that members of the anti-legalization team are plotting to make this as difficult a transition of law as possible. We partnered them with those who are out to corner the market for obscene gain. Those of us here in the coffee shop are just plain caught in the crossfire. I think that's probably enough to get started. So let me open Steve's mic. Steve, thank you for being on Lunch with Loudon. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Happy New Year. Yes, happy new day. And so tell me, maybe we could start with, what is it that brought you to this area of activism?
Well, I was born and raised in Seattle, but I moved away for several years. And when I moved back, I moved back to a state that had passed a medical cannabis law in 1998, but found that it was still not essentially implemented. And coming from a corporate background, I looked at the problems and I thought, wow, this should be easy to solve. And so I, not seeing anybody really doing, attempting to do that, I thought very, very naively that in a couple of years, I ought to be able to solve that problem. And so for the last 13 years, I've been a medical cannabis activist up here. And instead of things getting better, this year we've essentially killed off medical cannabis in the state of Washington. I'm not quite sure how we're going to get it back, but that's how I got started in it, and now I've moved on to establishing a new hemp industry here in the state of Washington.
Excellent. Now, there's got to be irony here if what indeed has happened is that the voters have voted for what they considered legalization of, I hate the term, recreational marijuana, and having that turn around and somehow undo the gains made by the medical marijuana community. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, you've got to look at the word legalization. And you didn't get legalization. Legalization, by definition, to legalize something, you have to remove all of the laws that made it illegal in the first place. And we certainly didn't do that in Washington. In fact, we didn't remove one law that made it illegal, and we added several new laws that made it even more illegal. And since it was passed in 2012, we've added even more laws making it illegal. It just keeps getting more and more illegal. It was my contention. I ran the No on I-502 campaign up here, not because I was against legalization, but because I was for legalization. And I realized that I-502 was not going to bring us that just by reading it.
Well, you know, I picked up on that in my reading for this, too. I mean, I know that those of us who sort of see marijuana as not the Schedule One controlled substance it has the reputation of being, right? I was surprised to see that Schedule One status isn't suspended. It's just some kind of a workaround, and because it's some kind of a workaround, it's very heavily controlled by administrative rule and statute, and that is confusing. And I think your point that this is not actually legalization, it's just some kind of modified prohibition, that does concern me. It does concern me.
Well, I think that modified prohibition is getting close to where I think it is. I think it's prohibition version 2.0. I think that since the government and industries and a lot of people with money believed that legalization was around the corner based on polls, they decided they had to do something. And so this is what they came up with. In other words, not giving us actually legalization, but giving us a new form of prohibition where now it's not quote unquote drug cartels controlling it. Now it's a state run cartel that's running it. The only difference between the street dealer and the state dealer is the state dealer is a lot more greedy. And while they keep saying that this was done to make sure that we had regulation and that we had taxation and tried to make it sound like this was a positive thing, they are overtaxing it to the point where no one in their right mind is really going to go in, no patient is going to go in, even if they could afford to, and pay four to five times as much money for lower quality medication than what they're getting now. That's assuming that stores actually sold what patients need, which the stores here in Washington are not selling products that the patients need. So now, since people are not going to go into these recreational stores and pay 4 to 5 times as much, what they decided to do is, well, then it's not fair. It's not fair. This is the best argument they can come up with. It's not fair to these people who got into the recreational marijuana business that they shouldn't have a monopoly, because obviously no one's going to buy from them at the prices that they have to pay, prices they have to charge. So let's make everybody have to pay that, including the patients. Well, of course, now the patients aren't going to do that. So what do you do then? You force the patients to go into the to either buy from these recreational stores at 4 to 5 times as much money, which they know isn't going to happen, or you now recriminalize the entire patient community. And that's what they intended to do, because these patients can't afford to pay 4 to 5 times as much money, can they? There's no way in the world. They can't afford to pay for the medication now. There's no insurance. The state's not going to help them. They don't tax any other medication in the state of Washington except
marijuana. Well, I do think that's an interesting breakout of the question, because certainly I was surprised to see that in Oregon it will be the OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, who will be administering whatever program they come up with here. And I've tried to find great, you know, details of the administrative rules and progress and stuff, and it's actually not that easy to find. But I know that when I was voting, I was not voting to have this antiquated, bureaucratic, very expensive, frankly, oversight on this process, nor did I have any intention to create mischief for folks with medical marijuana permits, because while it is easy to tell mythical stories about those people, the stats are pretty strong about the value of marijuana, especially for all kinds of patients. So we can go into that in detail if that's appropriate later. But I certainly don't know any slackers who have medical marijuana. I know people with serious, serious medical needs that are met, not the least of which are cancer patients in my family. So I don't understand, or I fear that this will happen in Oregon the way it's happened in Washington. And part of me wants to know, what do I do? How do I stop this?
Well, that's going to be the question, but stop it you must, because if you look at what's happening, the same people who funded and ran the campaign for 502 here in Washington ran the campaign in Oregon. It was New Approach Washington up here, which was run by Allison Holcomb, and New Approach Oregon down there, also Allison Holcomb. So the leopards don't change their spots. Their intentions were the same. And I had many arguments with friends in Oregon that said, well, yeah, but ours is different, because ours guarantees that it will, in writing, that it will not affect medical. I said, you know, you really need to look at what happened up here, because no matter what that says, the legislature can take that initiative once it's passed and pretty much do anything they want with it. And that's where you've got a problem. I see you're already trying to add another 20%, up to another 20% in taxes. Do you think that is going to help get rid of the black market, or do you think that is going to feed a black market in the state of Oregon?
Oh, well, sure. And, you know, we classically do these things we call sin tax, right? It's a sin to drink alcohol, therefore we tax it. It's a sin to smoke cigarettes, therefore we tax it. And now they're applying the same sin tax to, again, there's got to be a better word than recreational marijuana, but, you know, public use of marijuana. And if that tax is extended to folks with medical need, I just think it's way more than unfortunate. It's tragic, especially because the insurance companies kick in around this prescription, so to speak, using all their, you know, interesting legal maneuvers, not the least of which is this drug is still considered Schedule I. Although I've had Schedule I medications prescribed to me.
Well, look, the thing is, here, they are not even going to give patients a break on the sin tax. And of course it is a sin tax, we know that. I'm just wondering what sin the patient's committed.
Yes,
because
that's what I'm saying.
How did we end up in the crosshairs here? And it's real simple, because they don't want legalization of marijuana. They again, you've just set up a state cartel, okay? And they think they're going to get rich. They really believe they're going to get rich off of this state cartel. But in here in Washington, they've never lowered a tax as long as I've been around, and except by initiative. And so what they kept saying is, well, there's this 25, 25, 25, and 10 taxes. We'll fix that later. Never believe people who tell you that, yes, it's a bad initiative, but we'll fix it later. Because it never seems to get fixed later, does it?
Well, especially
in
Washington,
it's only gotten worse.
Yeah. I mean, tax revenue seems to be the thing that, once you've got a tax, I mean, one of the reasons Oregon doesn't have a sales tax is because everybody wants some other tax to go away. Then you can have a sales
tax.
but not until some other tax goes away, because this is just crazy. They always grow. But it, you know, to remove a medical prescription from that sort of whole harmless status, the word escapes me right now, but basically to not exempt a medical purchase from state tax law is criminal, you know, and to somehow say that because it's marijuana, it's different. Well, I promise you, I didn't, you know, no taxes on oxycodone, you know.
Well, the only way that it's really different is that it's safer. You want to tax it more because it's safer. I don't understand quite the logic of that. Not only that, I'm not quite sure what other medications in Oregon that your liquor board controls. Do they regulate any other medication that you're aware of?
Oh,
I'm not sure I want them to.
That is a lovely way to frame it. That is a lovely way to frame it, because indeed they do not.
Well, and you know what? I argued up here on I-502. You know, they have screwed it up. I'm sure everybody in Oregon is aware of how badly it's screwed up here in Washington. If they aren't, they'll find out soon enough themselves. But if the Liquor Control Board, who has changed the regulations every other week up here illegally, without holding hearings, without a public rulemaking process, if they had been in charge of how liquor was made following prohibition, okay,
mm-hmm.
we would have one kind of liquor and it would be $300 a quart. Because what experience have they had? You want to talk about no experience in medical issues? What experience did they really have? And in making liquor, all they were supposed to do was be licensing people. Okay, they managed to screw up a liquor monopoly. We actually spent $22 million to run an initiative in the state of Washington to fire the Liquor Control Board, and the only thing that saved the Liquor Control Board was the recreational marijuana law. And this is the most corrupt agency in the state of Washington. We're looking into, we want to get the feds to investigate both the Liquor Control Board and the Attorney General's office, because earlier this year, the Attorney General's office negotiated. We had been investigating illegal behavior of the Liquor Control Board, hiding documents, destroying documents, actually committing felonies. They were found guilty of 17 illegal meetings, non-public meetings with law enforcement agencies. They were guilty of destroying public documents to hide all this. And what the state attorney general's office did was they negotiated a $192,000 hush money payment to the guy who had filed the public records request, keeping him from, he had to agree to never file another public records request with the Liquor Control Board and never release what he found in his public records request.
Wow.
So $192,000 to shut him up and to keep them out of jail.
I always think that kind of cronyism and that kind of control is despicable. So let me add a little sidebar here, which is I've been involved in soccer at many levels for many, many years. And I was so thrilled. It was such a boost to my soul in terms of my belief in law and order and due process when we had a new attorney general for like 10 days and she like kicked FIFA management in the bum. And so, you know, three cheers for honest adjudication and enforcement of the law. And the contrary to that is, my gosh, when we find, if and when we find this kind of backroom, cigar-smoking control of things, I think we have an obligation as citizens, as activists, and as just plain Americans to take it on. To take it on.
Yes.
Because that's the only thing that will bring it down.
If we don't, we deserve that government. If we do not hold our elected officials accountable and our state agencies accountable, then we deserve what we get. But when our state attorney general is acting like a defense attorney for criminal agencies, then we've got to bring in the feds and find out why our state attorney general is negotiating hush money payoffs. I mean, that's a little scary. And I can see already down there, didn't you already have your head of the liquor board fired down there within just a few months after he was hired?
You know what? That one I don't know because I hadn't been following it closely. And I really only learned in the last few weeks that it was the OLCC that was going to be taking this on.
Well, the head of the OLCC was fired for leaking documents to an attorney down there who was representing big marijuana concerns.
Wow.
So you've got the same kind of corruption going on down there. We have people who really want to control the marijuana industry. They want to be the new drug cartels without going to jail, and they're willing to pay a lot of money to do it. They were the ones who spent $500,000 at least. That was the over the table, not the under the table money, lobbying at this session of the legislature to kill medical marijuana, and they made no bones about it. They said, we will be, our goal is to make sure that we are the only ones growing and selling marijuana in the state of Washington. And then, because what they intend to do then is now they're, and you'll find it down in Oregon, I guarantee you, it's the same exact thing, so I know you'll see it, is there's going to be a lot of calls for more money spent on law enforcement. Because now you have to enforce this new law. Wasn't it sold as a way to cut the cost of law enforcement on marijuana?
Yeah.
If it was sold down there like it was sold up here, yeah, you're actually going to spend less money, right? But now what they're going to do is they're really going to find people aren't obeying the law. So now they're going to have to fire up prohibition again. And, you know, it didn't work for the last 77 years. What makes them think that now they can call it legalization and all of a sudden start all the raids all over again? I don't think the public is going to put up with it. I think the public is going to revolt against that.
I agree with you. It's so much like it's the opposite argument against nationalization. You know, like if we if we were to say, let's nationalize the energy industry, you can imagine the arguments that would come up. And yet what you really explained to me, what I see now that I didn't see a month ago, was that we're actually, it's like, it's not nationalization, it's statization. It's, you know, but the state is taking over. And I think that that's very unfortunate, especially because if that were true, if that were functionally true, and this organization was on the side of the citizen, that and this state had decided that this drug or this substance needs to be decriminalized, I think you'd hear a much louder outcry when things like, you know, the University of Oregon had two football players who couldn't play against Ohio State this year because somewhere in their blood was some amount of THC, and they came from a state where they're around people who have medical marijuana. The state had already passed a law saying marijuana was not illegal, and it's pretty crazy. And when you think even of the levels of the drug that was in their system, it was like nothing compared to what, you know, the standards for what's considered a positive test. And yet I didn't hear anyone from the state of Oregon coming forth and saying, hey, these players are not considered intoxicated. They are not considered users of a drug under the laws of the state of Oregon. You know, nobody's up there. No one's got our back when we have to go deal with NCAA. No one's got our back when we got to deal with any of these things. So it's not a symbiotic relationship at this point. And if we are going to be legalized, if we are going to be monitored by some government agency, the least they could do is actually be a part of our team, be a part of our village, you know?
Well, if this is – it's not legalization when you can't smoke it anywhere, okay? When you can't smoke it anywhere, that you can't give it to anyone else without it being felony distribution. When you can't grow it, and up here there is no home growing, and if you have it in your blood, you're illegal. Exactly how is that legalization? Matter of fact, I think we're doing worse than we were doing before, don't you?
Well, I do.
They weren't taking our blood before. They weren't taking our blood.
Well, right, and frankly, for the levels that these two young men had in their blood, they could have been next to their grandma who had medical marijuana. I mean, they didn't even have to smoke to have this level. And so,
well, what is
really,
okay? That gets us to what is the right level? What is the wrong level? And it, you cannot set a right and wrong level. If you'll go back to the studies that were done by a professor out of Denver and one out of Montana, they studied the first 9 medical marijuana states. And what they found is in each of those medical marijuana states, after they had passed that law, the fatality rate, okay, the DUI fatality rate went down by an average of 9 to 13%.
Yes.
That's a huge drop, 13% fewer highway traffic deaths once people start smoking more marijuana. Okay, so now we have to, now they're selling this idea that, wow, we're going to have carnage on our highways. We are going to have an epidemic of drugged driving. Let me explain a term to you, because I'm a drug recognition expert. I'm certified by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, just like your highway patrol down there, as a drug recognition expert, and I'm an expert witness in court cases for pot DUIs. And what the word drugged driving means is not what you think it means. When you hear drugged driving, don't you think of impaired driving like you do with drunk driving?
Because
that's what
like
you're meant.
Question now, but if you'd asked me before, I would have said yes.
Yeah, well, almost everybody will say yes. But in fact, the term drugged driving was developed by the former, that whole idea was developed by the former head of NIDA and the second drug czar under Nixon, Dr. Robert L. DuPont, who runs behavioral sciences, a huge drug rehab, national drug rehab company. Drugged driving, by definition, is catching anyone with a measurable amount of an illegal drug in their system. And it states, by definition, has absolutely no relationship to impairment. In fact, he says that you are going to catch drivers who are impaired and drivers who are not impaired. That's not the goal. It's to catch people with it in their system. That's what drug driving is all about. So what we're doing is and according to the latest study from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration here in Washington, we are locking up innocent people for driving impaired when they are in no way, shape, or form impaired. There is no test for impairment for cannabis.
Right, right. Well, and when they say that there's a zero tolerance, meaning any presence of the substance in your blood is a guilty presence.
Your per se means in and of itself, and that means if you have it in your system, you cannot argue that you were not impaired. But what every study, and you'll hear this over and over again, well, we just don't have enough studies on marijuana impairment and driving. In fact, because I am an expert witness on this, I have every study ever done on this topic. I have 40 years of studies, and what all of the studies from the Federal Department of Transportation, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, all of them, pot haters all, what they have all agreed on, every study for 40 years, is that you cannot determine impairment by measuring blood concentration for any drug besides alcohol. No other drug, not just marijuana, any other drug. So why are we trying to set a number on it? Simply so we can arrest more people.
Right, right.
There's no other reason.
Right, the number varies depending on who you're talking to, too. The one article I read today that said that, again, going back to these University of Oregon football players, that NCAA's threshold is 10 times stricter than the 50 nanogram threshold used for commercial airline pilots. I would think the guys who... I would think the guys who did risk management for a commercial airline pilot, would have some notion. They would be guided by... actuarials do not guess about anything. And so this NCAA threshold of 5 nanograms, which these two men violated, is like nothing by comparison. And so you're right. It just sort of casts this thing out of the domain of fact and logic and law into this other place.
Show me the study where any number has been determined as a magic number proving impairment. And I will tell you that because you won't find one, because there is no study that's ever been done that determined that 5 nanograms or 2 nanograms or 100 nanograms was the level of impairment for the general population. There is no such study. I'd have it if there was one.
So I guess you're proving your own point here that this is all quite subjective. And it's also
it's entirely subjective. Everything from the standardized field sobriety test, and I don't know if you're required to take that in Oregon. Here it is optional. They just kind of trick you into taking it. But nothing in the standardized field sobriety test, which I'm certified in, or the drug recognition expert test, which I'm certified in, there is not one bit of science in either of those tests. I don't recommend that anyone take a standardized field sobriety test, ever. If you understood the field sobriety test, you would absolutely never take one. You are set up to fail. It's totally subjective. If I'm the officer giving you the test, I determine whether I want you to pass or fail.
This is all very
okay. Have you ever taken one? Have you ever taken a standardized field sobriety test?
No,
okay. Have you ever seen one given? Have you ever seen the test where they have you stand with your feet together, close your eyes, tip your head back, and touch your nose?
That's sad, because I would fail that.
Well,
I have a
neurological disorder.
Pardon?
Let me explain something to you. You're going to love this. That is called the Romberg test. The Romberg test, guess when the Romberg test was invented? I'll give you $100 if you can get within 20 years of it.
1852.
Well, you're close. It was like 1878.
Wow.
Yes, it's a neurological test. It has nothing to do with impairment. In fact, when they give the Romberg test, and if you look it up on YouTube and you can see an actual Romberg test being done, for me to do if I was a doctor and I was going to do this test on you, I would have one person on either side of you holding an arm, because one of the side effects to the Romberg test, when you tip your head back and you close your eyes, you're doing two things. You're cutting off the carotid artery blood flow to the brain, and by closing your eyes and tipping your head back, you're throwing off your inner ear balance. So one of the side effects of doing the Romberg test is a loss of balance, and they're using that as an impairment test for balance.
Well, I would fail it.
That's the side effect of the test.
Right. I'd fail it every time I go to the doctor, but I have a neurological impairment. And so it's like, how are you doing? See how far I fall is what it amounts to. So we have a couple callers in queue.
Sure.
And I would like to shift a little bit to my thoughts about how to improve the situation. But let's open the mic to area code 620 first. Hey, 620, welcome to Lunch with Loudon, whom are speaking with today. Did you give up on me, 602? 620, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, this is Jack Golding.
Hey, Jack. Do you have a question for our guest today?
This is very interesting.
Good.
I didn't know you can't get impairment. I know marijuana is okay, but what about cocaine, all these other drugs, cocaine and...
Sure. I'd be happy to test that stuff.
They ever test that stuff for impairment?
I'd be happy to answer that question for you. And let me give you an example.
Cocaine or heroin or all these other drugs. They're not marijuana. Marijuana can be okay for medical use.
Okay, let me explain to you exactly what the studies have shown. And this goes for all other drugs. I have got a friend who takes morphine for an inoperable, non-malignant brain tumor. He's had this brain tumor for about 40 years. And he is up to about... because you build up a tolerance to drugs, he's up to about 800 milligrams a day. If you took 50 milligrams of morphine right now, do you know what would happen to you? You would die.
Yeah.
Your respiration would stop. He takes 800 milligrams a day, and he's just fine to drive. Does that explain to you why this doesn't work? So where would you set that number for morphine? You can't. Because everyone is going to be different. Everyone is going to be different. There are people who will smoke marijuana, will smoke a joint for the first time in their lives, and they may not be good to drive. Okay? There are people who will use 3 to 4 grams of concentrated THC and use it every day for treating cancer, and they're just fine to drive. They aren't high at all.
Mm.
So you cannot judge for any drug besides alcohol.
Right?
It depends on the individual. Yes, because there is a tolerance level that people develop, and it reacts on the brain. So everybody's a little bit different, and that goes for cocaine, it goes for morphine, it goes for heroin, it goes for all kinds of things. And that's what every drug study that National Institute of Drug Abuse has ever done. That's what they
have. Have you ever done on the what? Investigate any studies on the National Institutes of Health? I thought they were supposed to be experts on all those drugs.
Well, yes, and all of them have come up with the same conclusions. Over 40 years and millions and millions and millions of dollars later, all the conclusions are the same. You can only judge impairment by blood content for one drug, and that's ethanol, which is alcohol.
Oh, yeah. You can easily get high on a lot of alcohol. It is
water soluble. It is water soluble. It enters your system very quickly, and you cannot develop a total tolerance for it like you can for other types of drugs. It just doesn't work. I'm not saying people should drive high. I'm not saying that there aren't people who use various drugs who are not too high to drive. I believe that there are certainly people that are too high to drive. But we have to come up with a better way of testing than measuring their blood. That's completely inaccurate. And it's not, unfortunately, what it's doing is it's not taking the dangerous people off the road. If you're pulling
right.
over people who are not impaired and you're tying up to courts and your law enforcement officers with looking for a certain amount of marijuana, THC in somebody's system, and you're not pulling over people who may be high on any number of other drugs, but you're not getting to them because you're pulling over the wrong people, you're not doing your job. You're doing the public a disservice.
Well, Jack, thank you much for your call, as always. I always appreciate your input to our show. I want to add one comment to what you just said, Steve, which is, you know, ironically, given what you just said, which sounds totally credible to me at this moment, is the people in law enforcement who support the quote-unquote legalization, which we now know is Prohibition 2.0, of marijuana are said that they would be pleased to not be wasting their time with their classic marijuana offender. And so, but what you're telling me is that we're actually more capable now rather than less capable of doing that.
Well, yes. And again, I end up dealing with a lot of law enforcement people.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, it's while they agree with me, it is not them that makes the decisions. It's the people who are in charge. It's the brass. And they get money. Everybody that gets pulled over, eventually that money, some of that money goes into the pockets of the people who are in charge of doing the budgets in law enforcement. And they're just happy busting people for marijuana. And that,
wow.
That's just sad.
Now we have
it's not the people on the street.
Right. I have a question for you that's coming in from our chat room. And
sure.
Tutor Magic, Biz Tutor Magic, said, please remind Steve of two things. One, marijuana isn't the only drug that's taxed. Alcohol is a drug and taxed. Cigarettes are also a drug and are taxed. Both can be used as OTC meds or have medical value under certain circumstances. So I'm not sure you disagree with that statement.
Well, okay, when you say, let's differentiate drug from medicine.
Okay.
While many medicines are also, you tend to use the word interchangeably very often. We don't normally think of, you don't have recreational or medical alcohol. That was a funny thing that they did during Prohibition, but in reality, nobody has medical alcohol. I've dealt with a lot of doctors in my 13 years of this business, and I've never seen one doctor yet recommend alcohol for an ailment. Maybe
okay.
there is one somewhere, but let's separate this. And when you're using this medicinally, to call it a drug, you know what? We got to get over this whole pharmaceutical model thing. I hear law enforcement going, well, you know, we want a pharmaceutical model, okay? Or we want a drug model. No, what we're really looking at is something more like a Chinese herbal model, because this is an herbal medication.
Yes.
Okay. And frankly, there are a lot more herbal medications down at your local herbal medication store that are much more dangerous for you than cannabis is.
Yes. Yes. And I do think that there's if you have a friend who's an alcoholic that's going in for surgery, they actually give them alcohol as a part of their treatment in the hospital, but it's to postpone withdrawal while they're having the medical procedure. But I know that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about, is it recommended? And I know that the occasional glass of wine gets quote-unquote prescribed for conditions.
But you don't have to have it. You don't have to have it prescribed. A doctor right, might exactly. say, you know, a glass of red wine a day is fine. You know, it might actually be good for you, but I don't think that's ever showing up on your medical chart.
Yeah, you're not going to get the RX and you're not going to have the insurance reimbursement. That is for sure. And so, I get your point. I also agree with you that when you start thinking of food as medicine or herbal medicine, then you start saying, absolutely, everybody can see the case for nicotine. Everybody can see the case for alcohol. And they can also see the case for, you know, marijuana or other things. I mean, I think when we start treating everything like everything that you consume has a potential plus value, a potential negative value, then I think that we sort of smooth out some of the false leads or funny places a conversation can go. Because we're really here talking about substances with so much impact that the government can take the stand it has the right to regulate, and people will buy it. They'll comply, or they'll at least allow it. And so that's...
Well, I think that I'm vehemently opposed to this whole idea of treating cannabis like alcohol. They couldn't be more different. One is a poison. Okay, one is a poison. One causes thousands of deaths a year. One causes none. I mean, can you show me why you should be throwing one in with the other? Is there any one particular reason? Is marijuana causing highway traffic fatalities? No. No one can prove that. There is not one study showing that marijuana is increasing highway traffic fatalities. But there are plenty of studies showing that it doesn't.
Well, don't you think this goes back a little bit to the whole way back when it was made illegal in the first place and the whole reefer madness kind of thinking that sort of threw this substance into something that we can feel legitimate about assigning a sin tax to, right? There's this whole moralistic backwash about marijuana. As a matter of fact, when I was looking for studies to prepare for this show, there's some very interesting studies out of Iran, Turkey. I mean, over there, they've got an issue. They've got a perspective that we don't share. But I think it has as much to do with this whole moralistic overture that's so in that way, it's like alcohol. Alcohol experienced prohibition. Alcohol has experienced this whole moralistic, challenge. And somehow marijuana got thrown into that long, long ago. And
the
I'm
only
not
commonality
sure how to separate
is prohibition.
Them now.
Prohibition was the only commonality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But prohibition on alcohol was there for a reason. And it wasn't political. Okay? It had a real reason, whether you agree with it or not. But prohibition on cannabis was strictly political. Okay? It's been around for 10,000 years and only illegal
right.
for 77. And now it's going to be quote unquote legal again. Look, we're never going to win this war until we actually get around to legalizing it. If you really want to get rid of the black market, if that is really your goal, then you don't tax it. Okay? Because believe me, anybody who's ever studied economics 101 realizes what are the things that create a black market. One is lack of supply. And of course, if you're limiting it to just a certain number of stores in a certain number of cities, you're limiting supply, correct? And if you mm-hmm. overtax it, overtaxation is the other reason for it to be a black market item. And so everything that you want to do to create a black market, you are doing with these laws. You're doing exactly what you say you don't want to do. How does that work?
Well,
how do you justify that?
Well, exactly. And I don't feel like that's what I was voting for when I voted for this referendum.
Nobody,
and
you
so,
thought you were voting for this vague term called legalization, didn't you? You just wanted it to stop. You just wanted it to stop.
And the other term that was near and dear to me was decriminalization. And there was a lot of talk, at least in Oregon, about decriminalizing it. You know, and so they're kind of part and parcel, but they are different, you know, and being someone who can sit on a witness stand and parse, you know this, that the decriminalization is different. And I'm sitting here wondering, okay, what does Janine Loudon do to move this in the direction she thought she was voting for, as opposed to the direction it seems to be going? And the first thing that comes to mind for me is, hey, the law says starting in a couple weeks, I can have 4 plants in my yard, and I better do that. It's like my statement. It's like I wasn't even going to do that, but I think I will. And it's because we have to, anyone who believes in liberty, right, has to act in accordance with the liberties they are given. It's not like you pull them out of your socks someday when you need it. And so I'm going to grow my pot plant, and I'll have to figure out how I'm going to do that. But the point is that we have to exercise every liberty this law allows, and then we have to fight for the liberties we thought we were voting for.
Well, let me point out one other thing to you. This morning in the U.S. Congress, in the Senate Appropriations Committee, they passed 2-1 to approve and send on to the Senate what has already been passed in the House, which is for the first time it would make medical in medical cannabis states that have approved medical cannabis, will make them exempt from the federal law. Not recreational, but medical. So now what we've done here in the state of Washington, and what I believe you're getting ready to do down there, is turn everything into recreational, which will eliminate the federal protections for the medical marijuana patients. So now, just as the federal government is going to legalize, it looks like they're going to legalize medical in medical marijuana states and keep the DEA away from us, now we're going to take away medical and put it all into recreation, which has no federal protection? Does that make any sense whatsoever, or is that just insanity?
So that's totally counterintuitive to what the voters in Oregon thought they were deciding. And
of course.
Certainly the state of Oregon has taken on the federal government more than once. When we passed our Death with Dignity law, they were saying, boo-hoo, we're going to come get you anyway. You know, and we fought and we won. The state won. And so I can see how Congress is trying to end run those kind of challenges, because they will lose them every time. They will lose these. But if what you're saying is that somehow this is a trick to work around the idea that there is such a thing as medical marijuana, then we're coming undone in terms of the intention of the citizens of this state, and frankly, probably the citizens of your state.
Well, and look, they're going to if they do the same thing down there, if they follow the same game plan as they did up here, they're going to start demonizing the patients. They're going to say they aren't really patients; they're all fakers. We need to consolidate the industry, because it doesn't make sense to have a two-track industry. All the same arguments you're going to hear down there as you heard up here. And they're all ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And if you buy off on them and lose medical down there, you're going to lose the federal protection that you may just end up with here in the next couple of days. And then the feds can come in and raid your recreational places, because only medical will be protected, not recreational. How dumb is that? Why not put recreational under medical? Then you've got some protection. Wouldn't that make more sense?
Well, and it, indeed, if the logic or the data follows that to do so saves lives, on the highways, saves lives, it, you know, reduces crime. I mean, the statistic that was most shocking but happy-making for me was that sexual assaults are actually dropping. And they, you know, the law enforcement people felt like there was causality. And so how could we not consider this a good thing? Seriously. How can we not consider this a good thing? And there's usually only two reasons that people, in the face of facts, continue with their old thoughts. One is the religiosity of it, and the other is the cash opportunity of it. You know, so
the greed factor is what the government is taking advantage of. That's what they've got is people, they're going to make it very, very expensive to get involved in recreational marijuana so that the people who are involved in medical right now, they won't even be able to afford to play that game. Okay? And so then the people who have invested a lot in recreational marijuana are going to insist to the legislature that they get rid of medical because the medical people are able to sell for less than they can. And they will call that unfair competition. Nobody told, everybody told them what the situation was going to be when they applied for their license, but now all of a sudden it's unfair. So just expect the greed head factor in Oregon, just like you've got here. You're going to have people with big money coming in from out of state and investing there, and medical is a thorn in their side. They want. Make no mistake, they want a monopoly. They want a pot monopoly in Oregon. And they're willing to put up the money to do it. And and law enforcement likes that.
They like a monopoly?
Sure. They would like what they would like to have up here, and we've gotten this confidentially from a couple of legislators who really believe it's going to happen, is they want four or five companies growing and distributing all the marijuana in the state of Washington.
Well, you know,
they want a real monopoly.
In the state of Oregon, one organization was, you know, brought in half the money to support this initiative, you know, and it was in the millions of dollars. In, you know, so that always makes me nervous, you know, when one organization can bring in $2.5 million into a referendum. That's a lot of money. And so, you know, I share your concern that we had sort of the ghost, the shadows that should have alerted us to the possibility that this is really just a wealth-building activity as opposed to a issue of liberty or freedom or citizen decision, citizen choice. So I'm definitely going to be on the lookout for that. And throughout this conversation, I've taken so many notes, Steve, that people who want to see the articles that I follow up and post can go to the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, and I'll share everything I can find based on the conversation we had today. So we're running late on time, Steve. Is there any last thing you'd like to leave us with? Is there any call to action? Is there anything you can tell us that will sort of help us know what to do next?
The only advice I can give is that legislators are scared of the voters, and if you want to save medical, if you want to keep medical separate, now is the time, not later, not next week or next month, because they will act very, very quickly. Now is the time to get a hold of your legislators and tell them you need to keep medical separate from recreational.
Well, thanks. Consider me on your team, on the team, to do that, because I this would be a travesty, you know, for the people who rely on medical marijuana. And
it will be criminal. I predict that there will be patients. I've told legislators this. There will be patients that die this year as a result of this legislation. Patients who make their own RSO, their own concentrates, are not allowed to under this law, and they will die without that. And those concentrates are not available from recreational stores. So where are they going to get medicine to treat their cancer, even if they had the money to buy it?
But
and if they make it themselves,
exactly,
they're felons.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if they make it themselves, they will be felons.
Yes. that it's already bad enough in some in other areas where medical marijuana is not available and people cannot do this legally. And you're right, there are felons with cancer all over this country. And anyone who thinks that's a small number of people who are involved in this, I mean, I went to a national conference a little while ago, and there was they were doing skits about how do you find marijuana, you know, for your wife who's suffering through chemotherapy. I mean, they're trying to make light of it because they're trying to bring joy to the conversation, but it was not funny that good, solid American citizens are being reduced to criminality in order to take care of themselves. And that's just spooky to me.
Well, are they going to build prisons with handicapped ramps? And I mean, I can't imagine how they're going to house all of the felons they're going to have that have cancer and multiple sclerosis and suffer from epilepsy. This is just wrong. And whether you're a medical marijuana patient or not, you need to stop it, because you don't know when it's you or your kid or your mother or your grandfather that are going to need it. Okay. And we as a society are judged by the way we treat our sick and disabled. And right now the state of Washington has just said, hey, screw y'all. We don't care if you die. And I mean, it's just literally that bad here now. And don't let it happen in Oregon, please.
Do what I can. And I just want to throw into that group of people that you mentioned that the blooming number of people with autoimmune illnesses that are also served by this substance.
Yes.
You know, that's just epidemic levels, autoimmune illnesses right now. Why?
Well, and you shouldn't have to have it for deadly illnesses. Why do you need to only have it for deadly illnesses? I've got a daughter who was using it for severe menstrual cramps. Should she not be using it for that? Nothing else worked.
Treatment 100 years ago. Standard treatment 100 years ago.
Yes. Queen Victoria.
I think, yeah. Yeah. Totally weird.
More than 100 years ago.
Yeah, well, way
all right.
More than.
Well, look, if I can be, if I can be of any more help, be sure and call me anytime.
Thank you. Maybe we'll touch back after this law gets into effect, and I know more, and we can actually strategize together what to do for Oregon. Steve, thank you so much.
I would love to help. You're very, very, very
I'll
welcome.
Call.
All right, you have a good day.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So, everybody, not the show I intended, but the show I'm pleased to have presented. This is an interesting conversation that's really lit a fire under me about what it is to have the freedom to take care of oneself, and how it is that sometimes arbitrary or self-serving things get in the way. Let me remind you of one thing before we go. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowd-funded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. To become a voting member or to donate, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. And I look forward to being on your team. Thanks, everybody. Coffee Party on.
Knowing, I come to watch your flowers growing. Ain't you got no right?